Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Royce, from the Willits High School, and
Kelsey from Laytonville High,
Julian from Redwood Academy,
and Miles Mancinelli from Ukiah High School.
On the last two shows, our topic has been marijuana and the adolescent brain. Today, we will discuss alcohol and the adolescent brain. There are several similarities in how marijuana and alcohol are used by adolescents, but their effects on the developing brain are quite different. Heavy alcohol consumption may harm the developing brain, significantly impairing learning, memory, and thinking in young people.
There is a wealth of research currently underway exploring the physical response of the adolescent brain to alcohol. MRIs and brain scans have been able to pinpoint where neurological changes occur when there is alcohol in the system. When it comes to alcohol, teen brains and adult brains are worlds apart. Adolescence is a time of transition, physically, socially, and emotionally. The adolescent brain is in transition as well. During adolescence, the brain undergoes a major role modeling involving the formation of new connections between nerve cells, as well as the pruning of existing synaptic connections. These changes affect the processes involved in planning and decision-making, impulse control, voluntary movement, memory and speech production, among others. Animal studies suggest that alcohol may have a greater impact on adolescent than adult memory, and that these effects may be long-lasting. Adolescent-onset alcohol abuse has been associated with a reduction in the size of the hippocampus, thought to be the center of emotion, memory, and the autonomic nervous system.
About 10% of 8th graders, 18% of 10th graders, and 24% of high school seniors binge on alcohol. That is, they consume 4 drinks or more at a sitting if they are female, or 5 or more if they are male at least once every 2 weeks. For the same alcohol dose, women tend to have higher blood alcohol levels than men because of their smaller size, lower body water content, and lesser ability to metabolize alcohol. In addition, 44% of college students drink this much or more at least twice a month. The effects of drinking on the brain are not always straightforward. Researchers have shown recently that a high blood alcohol level in rats, a model for human binge drinking, kills cells in the brain's frontal lobes and hippocampus, a hub for memory formation. The blackouts and resulting amnesia that occur in about half of all the college students that binge drinking may result from hippocampal damage.
Research at UC San Diego suggests that 24% of high school seniors and 44% of college students who regularly binge on alcohol might be handicapping their cognitive abilities. They score an average of 7 to 10% lower on verbal, visual, and spatial tests than their classmates who drink very little or not at all. These young people may have more trouble reading a map, following verbal directions to a place, assembling a bookshelf, planning a project, or staying organized and learning new vocabulary, among other cognitive challenges. A person who starts drinking at 14 is 4 times more likely to become dependent on alcohol than one who starts drinking at 21. No one yet knows whether the brain can fully recover from heavy drinking during its final years of development. In some research subjects, cognitive deficits still remain after a decade. We're now going to listen to a 5-minute radio story from NPR on the research being done at UC San Diego.
The drug teenagers use most is alcohol, and when teens drink, they tend to binge, downing 4 or 5 drinks in a few hours. Researchers say binge drinking has a real impact on the developing brain. Michelle Trudeau has more.
The teen brain handles alcohol differently than the adult brain, says neuroscientist Susan Tapert at the University of California, San Diego. This for several reasons.
First of all, the adolescent brain is still undergoing several maturational processes that render it more vulnerable to some of the effects of substances.
Vulnerable because key areas of the brain under construction during the adolescent years are more sensitive to the toxic effects of drugs, such as alcohol, says Tapert. She sees this effect in the thinking and memory of teenagers who binge drink. In a study published last month, Tapert looked at 12 to 14-year-olds before they'd ever used any alcohol or drugs. Over time, some of the kids started to drink, a few rather heavily, drinking 4 or 5 drinks per occasion, 2 to 3 times a month, classic binge drinking behavior in teens.
So after about 3 years into the study, we compared these kids who had begun to drink heavily to those who had remained non-drinkers.
And found that the binge drinkers did worse on thinking and memory tests. Plus, there was a distinct gender difference.
For girls who've been engaging in heavy drinking during adolescence, it looks like they're performing more poorly on tests of spatial functioning, which links to mathematics, engineering kinds of functions.
And the boys?
For boys who engage in binge drinking during adolescence, we see poor performance on tests of attention. So being able to focus on something that might be somewhat boring for a sustained period of time.
Suggesting to Tapert that alcohol disturbs the normal development of brain areas responsible for spatial functioning in girls and attention in boys.
The magnitude of the difference is 10%. I like to think of it as the difference between an A and a B.
Pediatrician and brain researcher Ron Dahl from the University of Pittsburgh notes that adolescents seem to have a higher tolerance for the negative effects of binge drinking, such as the ill feelings, the nausea.
Which makes it easier to consume higher amounts and enjoy some of the positive aspects. But of course, that also creates liability for the spiral of addiction and binge use of these substances.
Dahl adds that there's a unique feature of the teenage brain that drives much of their behavior during adolescence, and that is their brains are primed and ready for intense, all-consuming learning.
Becoming passionate about a particular activity, a particular sport, passionate about literature or changing the world or a particular religion, you'd have to keep them from doing this thing.
It's a normal, predictable part of being a teenager.
But those same tendencies to explore and try new things and try on new identities may also increase the likelihood of starting in negative pathways.
Susan Tapert wanted to find out in what way binge drinking affects a teen's developing brain. So using brain imaging, she focused on what's called the white matter of the brain.
White matter is very important for the relay of information between brain cells, and we know that it is continuing to develop during adolescence.
So Tapert imaged two groups of high schoolers, a group of binge drinkers, and a matched group of teens with no history of binge drinking. Tapert reports in a study published last year a marked difference in the white matter of the binge drinkers.
They appeared to have a number of little dings throughout their brain's white matter, indicating poor quality.
And poor quality indicates poor, inefficient communication between brain cells.
These results were actually surprising to me because the binge-drinking kids hadn't, in fact, engaged in a great deal of binge drinking. They were drinking on average once or twice a month. But when they did drink, it was to a relatively high quantity of at least 4 or 5 drinks on an occasion.
In another study now in press, Tapert reports abnormal functioning in the hippocampus, a key area for memory formation in teen binge drinkers. Reflecting their abnormal brain scans, the teens did more poorly on learning verbal material. Tapert says it's unknown if the cognitive downward slide in teenage binge drinkers is reversible. For NPR News, I'm Michelle Trudeau.
You can see some of the brain scans from the University of California study at our website, npr.org.
In the United States, the minimum age for alcohol consumption is 21. Yet, amazingly enough, a full 20% of all alcohol use in this country is by people under 21 years old. How much of this is due to the effects of advertising by the liquor industry? Here are a few facts about the alcohol advertisements. Alcohol companies spend over $1 billion per year on U.S. advertising. Research has shown that prior to high school graduations, youth spends 18,000 hours watching television. During this time, they will watch approximately 2,000 alcohol commercials on TV each year. Constant exposure to alcohol ads causes youth to believe drinking causes positive outcomes, increased social status, and acceptance by society.
One study found that youth aged 8 to 12 could name more brands of beer than they could U.S. presidents. Youth are exposed to alcohol ads through TV, internet, radio signs, magazines, and sports stadium signs. Underage drinking significantly increases the chances of academic failure, unprotected sex, alcohol addiction, vandalism, suicide, and homicide. One major alcohol researcher believes that the drinking age should be 24. that is, when the brain is able to handle alcohol without damage. Many parents will respond to their teen's alcohol use by saying, well, at least they're not using drugs. Because of its legal status for adult use, many fail to recognize the seriousness of teen alcohol use and abuse. If, as researchers have shown, early use of alcohol causes lasting brain impairment, society should make a point of educating youth to avoid its use.
Beyond the brain effects and advertising, here are some facts from the American Medical Association. Approximately 11 million American youth under the age of 21 drink alcohol. Nearly half of them drink to excess, consuming five or more drinks in a row, one or more times in a two-week period. Alcohol is the most frequently used drug by high school seniors, and its use is increasing. Nationwide, boys usually try alcohol for the first time at just 11 years old, while the average age for girls' first drink is 13. In short, our nation's youth are flirting with disaster. Consider the facts. Underage drinking is a factor in nearly half of all teen automobile crashes, the leading cause of death among teenagers. Alcohol use contributes to youth suicides, homicides, and fatal injuries, the leading cause of death among the youth after auto crashes. Alcohol abuse is linked to as many as two-thirds of all sexual assaults and date rapes of teens and college students, and alcohol is a major factor in unprotected sex among youth, increasing the risk of contracting HIV or other transmitted diseases.
We're going to discuss alcohol in the adolescent brain for 20, 30 minutes, then open the phone lines for your questions and comments. We're at the Willett Studio, and our phone number will be, area code 707-456-9991. We really appreciate your involvement in our shows and hope that you'll join in the conversation. So, Kelsey, tell me, how common is it for local youth to use or abuse alcohol?
Well, especially in the area that I live, I know that there are parties at least once every weekend on most occasions, and people just go there to have fun with their friends and drink as much as they want, and it doesn't matter when they go home or if they go home. It's pretty much just a free-for-all.
Are there substances besides alcohol abuse there?
Sometimes there's marijuana, but usually nothing more than that.
Ah, fun.
What about in Willett's, Royce?
I would say the same. It's kind of a commonality to have a lot of drinking at parties, and I think that's one of the major places where youth drink. It's not too bad. There's like a party once or twice a month, maybe. I don't usually go, but I hear about them over Facebook and whatnot.
I think most parents even drink with their kids. I mean, well, half of them. They will tell their parents that they're drinking, or some parents even encourage it.
What I found was interesting was that I hear that if parents drink with their children, they think that they can install a certain like morals around drinking, that if they drink with them, then they won't go out and drink so much as they normally would without the information. But a study that I'm reading here. In a study of 428 Dutch families, researchers found that more teenagers were allowed to drink at home, the more they drank outside the house as well. What's more, teens who drank under parental watch or on their own had an elevated risk of developing alcohol-related problems.
Parents will create safe zones or whatever to give the kids a place to drink or try things out, and they think that it's better if they're in an environment where they can be slightly controlled than if they were to just go out. And some other parents are just like, okay, you can go party. I know where you're going to be at. Don't drive and you'll be okay. And, yeah, it's...
But at least more drinking.
I think... If you're going to try out drinking at one point in your life, the best place to start would be with your parents under a controlled environment. Because if you go out to a party that's unsupervised, that's very dangerous. You don't know where you'll wind up the next day, and you could end up in a situation you really don't want to be in. But if you're behind closed doors with your parents, they can ensure your safety and make sure you don't hurt yourself.
And with your parents, peer pressure doesn't come evolved in your drinking activities.
In some cases, parents also just provide alcohol and a place to party and leave. So it's not that controlled.
But my understanding was from Roy's reading a bit of that study was that increases drinking on the whole. So is having a safe place to drink to begin really worth the price of the extra drinking that it entails later on?
Well, I don't think your parents should encourage you to drink with them, but rather than going to a party, I think it's the better option.
Yeah, I think that they shouldn't encourage you, but I think the commonality is if you do drink, then it's safer to do it with them. Like it says right here, that it's based on it's common sense, and that thinking that if parents show good behavior, hear modest drinking, then the child will copy it. And the assumption is that parents can control their child's drinking by drinking with the child. But
that's not the case.
But it's not the case.
Okay. It seems like a really circumstantial thing, I think, actually. Well, in some cases, I'm sure it probably does work that way. Kids who drink with their parents will adopt their drinking habits. But not always. I feel like it could also be an open gateway into binge drinking or just incorporating it into their daily life, labeling it in their mind as a safe thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But why would teens want to drink in the first place?
I suppose because it's fun.
Social thing, mostly. To hang out with friends, party, get crazy, be a part of what everybody else is doing.
I suppose there's also the aspect that of alcohol that it takes away your filters. You don't have the same inhibitions that you do otherwise. So I suppose, more people that are more shy might lose that social barrier and be able to be more outgoing while on alcohol or drugs. Though that creates the understanding in their brain that the only way that they can overcome their social difficulties is by consuming alcohol or using drugs.
Well, if they become a social butterfly when under the influence, then don't they have the capability to do the same when they are not under the influence?
They might have the capability, but might not know that. Yeah, they might not understand that they have that capability.
Right.
They still have those filters. And I'm speaking from a very subjective standpoint because I don't actually know. But
also socially, alcohol is so accepted in society today that most people don't even see it as a drug. I remember in school how when we have these pamphlets and these surveys and whatnot, or even guest speakers come in and they talk about drugs, they're like, hey, what's the most common drug? What drugs do you guys know about? And it literally takes to the end of the list until they realize that alcohol is one of them, because everyone does it, and nobody finds it to be a drug.
Yeah, it's. I think it's too common, personally.
Which is interesting, because earlier we discussed how parents often say, oh, it's not like they're taking drugs, it's only alcohol. But we just defined a drug, and alcohol is included in that category. Do parents not realize this?
I don't think so, since most parents have grown up with it, too. It's always been around as a common thing.
I think they find it to be a drug. But, like, how many adults don't drink? Only a few, I would think.
Yeah, I feel like there are more who do than don't, even in small amounts.
Mm-hmm.
But still, jumping back to when you said that you feel like adults do think that alcohol is a drug, still, wouldn't that be circumstantial, too? I mean, I'm sure that some do and some don't.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they see it as something that's not as bad as other things, like the kids aren't going out and shooting up heroin or cocaine or anything like that.
Yeah, it's probably a couple steps up the ladder of dangerousness.
true, but it still does have the problems and the negative effects that other drugs.
It's true.
So it is still bad, and I think it's good that you can only drink when you're 21. It's banned until you're 21.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have this thing here that says that in Australia, and as in many places in Europe, that it is okay to drink when you're 18, not 21, as it is in America. How do you guys feel about that? I know it's the same in Mexico.
Well, the brain still isn't fully, as we learned from reading... Oh, wait, hold on, we didn't read that yet, did we? Yes, we did. Huh, sorry. In the little bit that we read at the beginning, it said that the brain isn't fully done forming its neural passageways until 24. So does that mean that the brain will suffer even more harm on average because the drinking age is lowered? Or if the drinking age is lower, does that mean that kids will wait until they're 18 instead of starting at, say, 14?
I think it comes back to if you try it when you're younger and you have, like, a safe setting, then you'll be better with it when you're older.
But will you still try it when you're younger? If the age is closer?
You will, because it is lower. So there's that little thing.
Okay, now this is a little bit unrelated, but I think a really intrinsic part of alcohol being so deep-set in American society, or the worldwide society, it's everywhere, is that it's so widely... Yeah, everyone accepts it. There are the... Yeah, proportionally, the people who do accept consuming alcohol as an okay thing to do are... far greater than those who don't.
Mm-hmm.
Much to my chagrin, I have been to parties where alcohol has been consumed, and drank a bit myself. And the thing was, everyone there was drinking, or if they weren't drinking, they weren't as a part of the whole party going on as those that were. And I think that if that aspect of togetherness or community through alcohol, if that part of it wasn't there, it would be a totally different situation as far as alcohol was concerned.
So there's like a divide between the drinkers and the non-drinkers at parties?
There are. And I think that, well, because there are all these people that share something in common, which is drinking, and they've come to this place to drink alcohol, without that aspect of togetherness through drinking, it loses its, it would lose its appeal. Because I feel like at least half of occurrences of drinking are done socially.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I went to this party. I didn't drink because I wanted to get drunk. I drank because everyone else was.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to a party, people were drinking and everything, but they weren't really pressuring me to drink. And I liked that because I didn't feel bad for not drinking. Everybody else seemed to have more fun, but I wasn't pressured to do it at all.
But did you feel like you weren't as included?
Yeah. I felt like everybody else was bouncing around and having a good time and playing games. And I was just kind of sitting there like, oh, well, this is boring.
Exactly. It has that screen, that division between of the drink and don't.
So maybe alcoholic abuse will start in social situations, because I don't think you'll find yourself drinking by yourself until the addictiveness of alcohol hits you.
Again, yeah, I think it has that that social aspect. It's a it's a gateway into heavy drinking.
Right.
Definitely does have more availability in a social aspect.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of that, like, drive to try it. Like, if you're at home and there is alcohol somewhere, you're probably not going to go and pour yourself a drink.
Because it doesn't taste good.
There's that, yeah. It's like, pretty much. Oh, I have nothing to do. I'm going to go and, you know, I'm going to get drunk for a while. I mean,
doesn't happen,
yeah, as much as I would say if you're in a social situation, like we were just talking about.
Right.
But I have found that divide that we were talking about, how the non-drinkers to the drinkers, that really does come out at parties. Yeah, but then sometimes they do intermingle, but there is that divide there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's that, that division, that being included in an exclusive group that we really need to tackle if we're to do much about this problem.
Another thing about alcohol, though, is that it has so many different things for all different kinds of people. There's alcohol used for religious reasons, like wine, and then there's more fancy things like champagne or more wine, and that's considered more elegant. Or
celebrations and stuff.
Yeah, and then there's stuff, party drinks, like margaritas and that kind of stuff. And the alcohol is so widespread, it's put in so many different categories that you can pretty much go anywhere, anytime. And there's alcohol for a reason, and for the situation or the place or anything like that.
There's energy drinks with alcohol in it. And there's store-bought... bought already mixed drinks like Mike's Hard Lemonade or the tomato and beer.
What's that, Bloody Mary?
Bloody Mary, yeah. Mix. Yeah.
I've seen margaritas in cans before.
Margaritas.
Yeah.
Now, do you know more of these drinks than you know U.S. presidents?
Should we try it out?
Sure, why not?
Oh, jeez, you guys put me on the spot.
Start at the beginning.
George Washington.
Okay.
Adams, what's his name? No, don't laugh at me. I've had a
long... this is bad.
A long morning. Adams, and then there's Jefferson, and then there's Andrew, and then there's...
I don't know if that's the first time.
Does anyone know the president that was currently in the White House during the Prohibition?
No idea.
That's kind of ironic, actually.
Yeah.
Isn't that ironic?
It's probably during one of those years where...
Was it like Jackson, maybe? I don't know.
No, it was not.
No.
It was not Jackson. It was probably during one of those years where the presidents didn't have much power in the White House and didn't do much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Those lame
presidents.
Better
ban something. Alcohol.
Those lame presidents who don't do anything that you never remember.
My history teacher's going to be mad if he hears this.
I'm hoping mine isn't listening. Yep.
Yep, same here.
I know we just went over this year.
Did we talk about the statistics of, like...
No, we haven't.
Oh. Sure. You guys want to go into that?
Go for it,
sure.
Roy.
Oh, okay. Well...
Take it away.
We have some statistics here from the Laneyville High School, correct? Yeah. And, do you guys want to talk about this?
Sure. I'll do it.
Okay, go for it, Julian.
Now, let's see. We have a study here that shows that, in the 7th grade, and this was a study done in the 2009 to 2010 year at the Ukiah Unified School District, Laneyville Unified School District. In 7th grade, 50% of the class said that they don't drink alcohol, 31% said that they had that they take just a sip or two, and 19% say that they just have enough to feel a little. In 9th grade, 27% said that they don't drink alcohol, 19% said just a sip or two, 19% said just to feel it a little, and 35% said enough to feel it a lot. And in 11th grade, 31% said that they don't drink alcohol, none at all said that they just take a sip or two, 23% said enough to feel it a little, 31% to feel it a lot, and 15% until really drunk. I mean, do you guys think that these statistics are accurate?
They seem a little bit low to me, actually. Being around the school, it seems like people are there partying every weekend. Most people. I can't think of many people who haven't tried it at all. at all. I mean, very slim to none.
Well, let's take it down to the... oh, no, wait, we don't have that one. Let's move on to the next table. Have they ever driven after drinking? So, in ninth grade, 62% of them said that they've never driven after drinking. And 38 had. And this is divided up into 19 of them had one time, none of them had two times, 15% had 3 to 6 times, and 4 had done it 7 or more times. That 4% is the group you want to watch out for.
I noticed something interesting here. For the 7th grade demographic, 50% said that they don't drink alcohol. However, in 9th grade, that drops to 27%, and then it gradually rises from there. So, does drinking start in high school, predominantly?
I think so.
Yeah, I suppose it would.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's less common for middle schoolers. I've heard about them trying other stuff, but not really alcohol.
It's probably harder for them to get into parties where drinking is happening as a middle schooler. Because who's going to bring a 6th grader to a party?
Oh, God, I heard about...
Stranger things have happened.
I heard about one party where with kids under sophomore year, if they wanted to get in, they had to take, like, 5 shots before they got in the door.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yikes. That's... Okay. And there's one last table here. Anyway, that's not a relevant table. Never mind. Oh, here.
And Kelsey, there's that divide again. If you can't handle your drink, then you can't spend time with us.
Yeah.
You're an outcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they're younger, so they're not as cool anyway. So if you want to come in, then you're going to make a fool out of yourself right off the start.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, we're trying to reduce the alcohol usage level, right? Sounds like we're talking about this exclusive club. Don't do it, kids. All right.
So it does seem like there's like a go big or go home kind of factor in here, where like with the 11th graders, 31% doesn't drink alcohol.
Or
there's 0% who take a sip or two, and then there's a combined total of 69% who do drink. So enough, at least enough to feel a little to totally until really drunk. So there is that divide there.
And we have this one last table that says that in 7th grade, 88% of 7th graders have never, say that they've never been very drunk or sick from drinking, and 13% have said that they've been very drunk or sick 1 or 2 times. In 9th grade, 60% had 0 times, 24 had 1 to 2 times, 12 had 3 to 6 times, and 4 had 7 or more times. And there's a pretty scary jump when we get to 11th grade, where 31 have 0 times, 31 have 1 to 2 times, 15 have 3 to 6 times, and 23% of them have 7 or more times.
That's a 50% jump from 7th grade to 11th grade of never having drunk.
Mucho.
Drink.
Demasiado.
So there is that, where we were talking about earlier, how more kids do tend to drink when they've hit high school. And you can see that pretty apparent here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that peer pressure that starts to appear in high school is more than that for pot?
I think it it's different for us who live where here in California.
Yeah.
Because since pot is so available to us.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
I think alcohol is more widely accepted than marijuana.
But there's more marijuana. Well, I think that it varies from location to location.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you go to...
depending on availability. And
exactly.
Alcohol is available everywhere you go.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that alcohol would be more widely accepted in, say, I don't know, Alabama than here. Whereas in Alabama, marijuana is has more of a stigma to it than it does here. Mm-hmm. Because it's everywhere.
Definitely.
I think there's more peer pressure for marijuana than alcohol, at least in Laytonville.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. It seems like more people push you to have a joint or whatever than to have a drink. It's more, I think it's widely more used at the school.
Okay. I have the opposite experience, actually.
Yeah. I think I found that too.
Yeah, I've been pressured to have a drink before, but never to use pot in whatever form.
Yeah, like my father has offered me a drink a few times, like maybe a shot of wine, but he's never offered me a joint.
Yeah. I found that the farther I get in high school, that like alcohol is more available probably because of the parties than marijuana would be. There isn't just people out there just like, hey, you want a joint, because of the availability of the alcohol versus the marijuana, where marijuana is more, it's illegal, and it's more expensive than...
Well, it's illegal to drink alcohol. Underage, too.
I know, but it's more available than... It's more available than weed because you can go to the store and get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Though it is different here because we have so much weed.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the legality issues. Yeah. Just because... Yeah.
Most people's parents grow it, though, so it's pretty easy to get a hold of weed.
That's true, but not everyone knows where to get weed. Like, I can't think of any place off the top of my head.
Must be new here.
Hey, I've lived here for 13 years, or almost that. Anyway, I know where to get alcohol because they sell in literally every corner store, and grocery store, and convenience store, and gas station.
Yeah, maybe people don't consider alcohol to be a drug because it's legal.
Yeah,
we're talking about the peer pressure, right?
Yeah.
Well. I find alcohol to be more of a social thing than marijuana is. Mm-hmm. Like if you're at a party, there's a whole bunch of alcohol everywhere. The people are offering you alcohol. But if you're smoking at a party, you go out,
you go outside,
you go out into the forest and you smoke out there. It doesn't happen in the center area of the party.
Because it's something you could do alone to calm yourself down.
I guess I haven't been to enough parties.
Well, people will even smoke and then come back inside and drink. And I think that's more common than just smoking at a party or...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There's always the, oh, man, I got cross-faded. Look how cool I am.
It's so hardcore, man.
Yeah.
Like, personally for me, times I've been offered alcohol versus marijuana, like just walking down the street, there'd be like somebody, hey, you smoke? And I'm like, no. And they're like, oh, get out of here then. But like alcohol, like I'll be at a party, they'll be like, hey, you want a drink? You want a shot of this? You want a shot of that? Do you want to play beer pong? Do you want to play some drinking games? More peer pressure for alcohol than marijuana. That's what I find in my life.
Have any of you guys been to a party where there have been people drinking, but you didn't drink?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of them.
Have you guys realized that when you go to a party where there's alcohol and you don't drink alcohol, as soon as they start drinking alcohol, they have no idea what to offer you? It's like, oh, well, we got some...
They don't know what to offer
some
you?
Some wine and beer and... Oh, you don't drink. Have a beet.
Yeah.
Have a beet.
this bottle of perfume or...
Here's a Kleenex.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Have my wallet.
Have you noticed that? That's my experience.
No, but I find them, they start like mixing alcohol. They're like, do you want this? And it just gets less and less appealing the more drunk they get. Like, oh, we made this mixed drink for you to want this. And it's like half beer. Like there's some vodka poured in it. There's like some Skittles inside.
I urinated in that, man.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. I think maybe our view is a little bit too objective, and I'm sorry, subjective in this case.
Also, they get pretty funny to just sit there if you're not drinking and watching the drunk people. That also gets really entertaining as well.
There's some really stupid people, but then there's some people who are just like, what is that guy doing? What? That's so funny.
I've been to places where that's happened. Yeah. It's probably because you lose your inhibitions when like we were talking about earlier, when you do drink.
Why is that guy jumping off the roof?
Yeah. Is it?
So
this just in.
Yeah, this just in. Alcohol companies spend over $1 billion per year on U.S. advertising. Constant exposure to alcohol ads causes youth to believe drinking causes positive outcomes, increased social status and acceptance by society. One study found... we went through this, didn't we? Mm-hmm. One study found that youth age 12 contain more brands of beer than they could U.S. presidents. Youth are exposed to alcohol ads through TV, internet, radio, signs, magazines, sports stadium signs. Research has shown that prior to high school graduation, youth will spend a lot of time watching television, watch about 2,000 advertisements for alcohol every year. 52% of movies contain alcohol brand appearances. Wow, that's a lot. Well, 83 contain alcohol usage. Whoa, that's crazy. And alcohol companies targeted by magazines read by youth include Sports Illustrated, Maxim, Rolling Stone, Glamour, US Weekly, and Playboy. I suppose Playboy is an entire different issue, but we'll address that some other time.
There are definitely ads everywhere.
Oh, yeah. True. I was talking about earlier, I walked by the local village market in Willits, and I was just staring off to space, and I was staring at the outside of the storefront, and I realized out of the probably 15 or so ads up there that there was literally one that wasn't alcohol or cigarettes, and it was for Coca-Cola. And the majority were alcohol ads.
Yeah, I noticed that when watching sports, after the show's over, it often says, sponsored by Budweiser. Why would they sponsor sports in the first place if not to get their name into a wider audience?
That's just it. They don't.
Yeah, they don't. Exactly.
Yeah, some of that reminds me. Miles, you made a point earlier about how alcohol is more accepted because it is, to an extent, legal.
To an extent.
Yeah, and as compared to marijuana, which isn't. Well, recently in Colorado and one other state, Washington, yeah, pot has been legalized to an extent. Do you think that if pot becomes as legal as alcohol, that it will still have the same proportion, or will that change?
The same proportion?
Of acceptance in society. Sorry, didn't clarify.
I think there will still be that stigma around marijuana versus alcohol, because marijuana is seen as a drug, and where alcohol isn't as directly seen as a drug.
Yeah, alcohol was never really seen as a drug, but but marijuana has been for the longest time.
Mm-hmm. Probably because it's been around in our nation's history for so long, and it's been here for so long.
Yeah.
It's commonality at this point.
There was a point in time where it wasn't legal, but...
You see how fast that was turned around?
Yeah, exactly.
We like our alcohol.
Trying to get rid of it didn't work.
Oh, well then. So now, we invite you, the listening audience, to respond to the ideas presented here today. We're open to your questions, comments, and insights. We are in the Willett Studio, and our phone number is 707-456-9991. Please call soon. This show will end at 4 o'clock. Do you think that consuming alcohol in teenage years is a problem? When did you first drink?
When you hear teens drinking, do you think, well, at least they're not taking drugs? Are adults who consume alcohol being hypocrites if they tell their children not to drink? What do you think of parents who hold supervised drinking parties for teens so that they can learn how to safely use alcohol?
Should alcohol advertising be restricted in the same way that tobacco products are? And should the minimum drinking age be raised or lowered?
Well, the phone number is 456-9991, area code 707. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio. We've got a really confusing echo. It's no fun. The number is 456-9991. Please call and be a part of this discussion on alcohol and the adolescent brain. Please call soon, because the show will be over at 4 o'clock. Oh, and I think that Miles and I have cooked up a little musical thing for our first caller.
Well, just as a matter of historical correctness, alcohol has, for millennia, been seen as a medication, as a drug. The only way you could buy alcohol during Prohibition was with prescription through a pharmacist. So, historically, it has been perceived as a drug. It's only recently that it is actually after Prohibition that mixed drink and so forth were seen more as a recreational tool as opposed to a medication.
Do you know how long the Prohibition lasted?
I do not. I believe it was on the order of about 3 decades, but I'm not certain about that. It started in the late, don't know. I would say 20s to mid-30s, but...
Wasn't it like 12 years?
Nah, it was longer than that. I'm sure that somebody with internet access can tell you real quick. Next caller, probably. Thanks, bye.
Thank you.
Do we have another caller? No? Okay.
Forgot to say we're on the air for that guy.
Oh, well. He's off the air.
Oh, caller, you're on the air.
You're
on
the
air.
That was terrible. Hello.
You guys have got a good voice going there.
Thank you.
binge drinking is something I think that has been invented recently to make alcoholism a major thing so that doctors can give you pills.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But tell me, what is your definition of binge drinking? Because there have been several different ideas put forward of what binge drinking actually means.
Yeah, it's a hard one for me. I live away from town, and I buy a six-pack of beer and drink a six-pack of beer once a week.
Okay.
And my doctor at the VA calls that binge drinking because I drink a six-pack once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Binge drinking, I think, is something where you would be drinking for 4 or 5 days consistently and not remember a damn thing.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
We've had others describe it like that.
Yeah, the other description was that binge drinking is drinking a large amount in a short amount of time.
Yeah, I suppose
there's so many ranchers and what you call Christians and stuff. I see at stores that are buying a 12-pack a day and going home, and they're fine people. They raise good Christian children, and you know I consider 12-pack a day binge drinking.
Though for children, can binge drinking have a different definition?
Yes. I would say 3 beers a day would be binge drinking for a child.
Yeah,
I didn't drink until I got drafted in the military. I was clean and sober until I was drafted in the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, why did you start drinking?
Oh, Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you're locked up in barracks with a bunch of Looney Tunes. There's nothing else to do but beat each other up and kill people and drink beer.
So, once again, it was more of like a social thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, when I was 18, I used to go out and party with my friends. The young lady that said she felt strange sitting there with everybody else running around being crazy, she shouldn't be. She could get out and be crazy straight.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that are drinking and everybody else that's drinking, you don't have to be drunk to go and act wild and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the part of fun of being a youth is you can do it.
Yeah,
crazy. You know, who's gonna point a finger at you and stuff, especially if everybody else is drunk.
Definitely.
Yeah. If only every youth saw it that way. But
go ahead.
A lot of youth have a social barrier, like in social situations, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to be themselves because they feel like if they be themselves, maybe people won't accept them.
Yes.
Yeah, there are a ton of different reasons.
Yeah.
And alcohol helps them overcome that.
Right.
Yeah, and the common problem is that kids, or heck, not even kids, it's not limited to kids. All sorts of people will drink alcohol or use any sort of drug to overcome the social barriers that they have.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's unfortunate for a lot of people that they just can't learn to let loose and be wild and crazy with a group of people. That's unfortunate. And alcohol has been around since mankind has been drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah.
I mean, the beer and wine, I think beer was first before wine in the fermentation process because water was not safe to drink.
Yeah.
I mean, they said even Jesus turned the water into wine.
Thank you very much for your comments.
All right. Have a good
caller, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
A couple of things I wanted to talk about. One is the use of the word drug.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, there's drug as a medicine, a pharmaceutical, or or an herbal remedy that's going to do something. And then there's drug with a certain emotional overtoning that says, that's bad, you shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
And, and so we get into confusion when we're not clear about the difference. So is alcohol a drug? Well,
I think
that could depend on the context.
It's not
an anesthetic
used as much these days. Well, alcohol as an anesthetic is poisonous, but alcohol drinking-wise isn't used these days as much of a medical thing. But we have the same question as you did earlier about what the definition of a drug was, and I'm pretty sure we said it was a mind-altering substance,
of
some kind.
Well, no, once again you're using the simple word drug. Well, we've got drug stores up and down Main Street of America, you're not going to necessarily be getting alcohol in there. You're not going to be getting recreational substances. So are you talking about recreational substances?
Yeah.
Well, I think that we're talking about...
Or are you talking about medicinal substances?
Well, I think that we're talking about substances that can be used...
I know what you're speaking of.
Mm-hmm. But as...
talking about the clarity of wording so that our mind is clear about what we're talking about. You know, is alcohol a drug? Well,
socially...
In the context that you're referring to, so many people are saying it's just what we do. It's part of a party or coming home.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a drug, is it?
No. It's interesting.
They're considering it not a drug by the actual book definitions and legal definitions it will be. So the other point I wanted to bring up is the difference between use and abuse.
Yes.
So many, many, many substances in this planet are not dangerous when we're in the category of use, and are quite dangerous in some other context. In the context of drugs, including alcohol, there's plenty of people who use some wine at a party, and it's pleasant. They've had one or two or perhaps three things of wine.
But
other people who either drink a lot more or are a lot more affected by it,
I think it really depends on the person.
The difference makes it abuse is when you're doing harm to yourself or harm to others around you. And then we're in the category of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And the binge drinking, certainly moves rapidly into through the borderline between use, where we're just having a fun party, and abuse, where we're actually harming ourselves or others around us.
But for a youth, can't even alcohol use have detrimental effects?
That's debatable. Quite debatable.
That's the conversation we're having at this point.
Scientific pieces of data pointing to that happening, at least in certain instances. We have lots of stories from around the world of some of the world's great geniuses others, you know, and that doesn't seem to be creating harm. We don't know if they would have moved from an A to an A plus. I mean, that's debatable.
Well, that's why it's good to have this conversation.
But clearly, there's a part of us that knows when we're going over this edge between use and abuse. We may ignore that.
But as youth, we might not have that part of our brain that tells us whether it's use or abuse.
I don't think that's in the realm of really taking responsibility for one's own behavior. Even there's a place of a part of us, at least in my opinion, that knows when we're moving over that edge.
That's why youth have
often
need to have a special.
To ignore it's all with youth. We don't have a lot of life story to add to it that says, yeah, really, this really is the edge. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
I don't think I want to do this, you know. It's true. And in our current societal arrangement, there's not, for many youth, there's not good integration and training into adult roles and helping to develop that. And that's something we've been working on for a while.
True. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for your points. I really appreciate them.
Caller on the air.
Oh, sorry. I turned the radio off. Wow, the guy had some air. One thing you guys are not or have not yet mentioned is the United States national culture, you know, developed out of the Puritan, you know, basically foundations. And my family's from Germany. The alcohol concept is completely a moot point. We don't have to worry about peer pressure. We don't have to worry about all that. What the kids have to worry about around here, you know, you grow up with it. You're born and raised with it. The beer is at the table. It's always present.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it's never this innocuous, mysterious, taboo thing, which kids being kids are the most curious about anything that they're not supposed to do or have or say or don't go over there. It's exactly where they want to go now. Don't do this. It's exactly what they want to do now. Don't drink that. That's exactly what they want to try now.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole culture is kind of creating its own problem. If it wasn't a big deal like milk, then it would get treated like milk. And they wouldn't have, the kids that grow up and go to high school and stuff wouldn't have that same peer pressure that they have.
So you think that without...
On your show, we're talking about... Pot's not a big deal to them because they grew up around it.
Mm-hmm.
It's basil, alfalfa, pot, corn, you know, green beans. Whatever crop is growing, it's no big deal. You know? But then this alcohol concept comes around and they're like, oh, no, that's bad for you, that's bad for you, that's bad for you. And in other cultures, in like Germany specifically, it's no big deal, and kids don't have an alcoholism problem.
I believe we talked about that earlier, and how Europe does have different ideals on alcohol, and how their drinking age, if that is 18.
Yes, I might have missed that. Sorry, but yeah, I had a German foreign exchange student even come over and live with us for a year while she was going to high school, and she even mentioned, she's like, "Wow, the kids." You know, at the high school that she was going to here in America, she was like, the kids, all they have talked about, they're like fixated on what they're going to do for the weekend, and it always involves, you know, beer, alcohol, whatever, parties and stuff. She's like, they're so fixated on it. Why? And I was like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is our world.
Yeah. I think society should do more about alcohol and youth, and that's why we're on here.
Yeah, I mean, kids are going to be fascinated by anything that they're not allowed to do.
Exactly.
So if it was less, I guess if it was just not given to them in the on the plate that says this is a completely taboo, foreign, evil creature, you know, then maybe they just wouldn't care about it so much.
It makes a lot of sense.
Maybe parents should give both sides of the story. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's all for this month's edition of You Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Kelsey, and...
Me, Julian Hartage-Verguer.
Me, Miles Mancinelli.
And Royce Pert.
Laytonville Healthy Starts Coalition Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's of Youth Speaks Out. Our environmental prevention strategies in the community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in Laytonville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email JAMA at jamashields@pacific.net.
Youth Speaks Out is produced and distributed and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 111-1162, Willits, California 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net.
There you're listening to KZWX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits, and Ukiah 88.1 FM Fort Bragg. See ya.